Thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, December 8th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening. The ZANU-PF purge targeting suspected loyalists of the under fire Vice President Joyce Mujuru continued today, with two cabinet ministers and five others being dumped from the Central Committee just 2 days after the ruling party's Congress.
The sacking of Sekera Mai is not surprising. This was something that was coming. Basically on the fact that he was linked to a camp that is believed or that is alleged to be, he have been plotting against the ouster of President Mugabe.
South Africa releases new guidelines for foreigners seeking asylum in the country, but rights groups say the new requirements can put the lives of asylum seekers at risk.
Since the government now requires salary slips, considering the economic situation in Zimbabwe, most people, when they come to look for asylum here in South Africa, they will be unemployed.
And relatives of performing artist Pritin Khaba, who succumbed to throat cancer in India on Saturday, appeal for donations to repatriate her body back home for burial.
The ZANU-PF purge targeting suspected loyalists of the under-fire Vice President Joyce Mujuru continued today, with two cabinet ministers and five others being dumped from the Central Committee just 2 days after the ruling party's Congress. Thomas Chiripasi has more details.
Officially closing the 6th ZANU-PF National Congress on Saturday, President Robert Mugabe directed his party activists from Mashonaland East Province to convene an urgent meeting to re-elect their representatives to the Central Committee, saying he had taken this decision following complaints from party members in that province. Some Congress delegates reportedly complained that some members loyal to Mrs. Mujuru had been elected to the powerful Central Committee. Mr. Mugabe directed the provincial structure to expedite this process so that he could have time to assess the new members before appointing members of the Presidium and the Politburo.
Can I put in a controversy? We will ensure you sit down, Nevan. We are prepared that you redo the exercise. Kau Konde is there. Wakati is from South Africa. He's no longer there. And I will not want to see anyone interfere with you. Mogara pasi moga.
Following Mr. Mugabe's directive, ZANU-PF's Provincial Coordinating Committee for Mashonaland East Province met in Marondera today and reportedly decided to recall Defence Minister Sydney Sekera Mai and Health Minister David Parirenyatwa from the Central Committee. Political analyst Blessing Vava says the recalling of Sekera Mai is a well-calculated move by those aligned to the ZANU-PF faction, led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, to block Sekera Mai, long believed to be a candidate in the race to succeed Mr. Mugabe, from being appointed into the ZANU-PF presidium.
Well, the sacking of Sekera Mai is not surprising. This was something that was coming, basically on the fact that he was linked to a camp that is believed or that is alleged to be, he have been plotting against the ouster of President Mugabe. And what it means now is that all the comrades who were in the Mujuru camp have lost their positions, which makes it very clear that the front runners to succeed President Robert Mugabe are those now belonging to the Mnangagwa faction.
Mr. Mugabe told delegates at the just concluded ZANU-PF Congress that he would be announcing the Presidium and members of the Politburo this week after Congress ratified the ruling party's constitution to allow him to make the appointments. Some ZANU-PF sources in Marondera told Studio 7 that others who fell by the wayside are Deputy Agriculture Minister Paddy Zhanda, Jericho Gotora, Zhikomborero Mangowo, Mo Blessing Mushure, and David Kanjere, who are allegedly linked to Mrs. Mujuru's faction. Efforts to get a comment from Sekera Mai and others were unsuccessful. At the time of going to air, The sources said the provincial coordinating committee was still receiving names from the party's districts in the province of those that want to take over from the members that were booted out. While some Zimbabweans are expressing constitutional reservations about Mr. Mugabe's delay to announce his deputies, National Party chairman, and members of the Politburo, the MDCT seems to have also breached its own constitution by failing to hold a National Council meeting within a month following its own Congress, as stipulated in the constitution. But the opposition spin doctor, Obet Gutu, told Studio 7 that they were acting within the confines of their constitution.
Far from it. We are actually perfectly within the constitutional requirement that says within 1 month from the date of the completion of the Congress, there must be the sitting of the National Council. Here we are talking of 1 month and we count 30 working days. In other words, we don't include the weekend. And if also we take into account that the process of electing various national executive members from the party's 12 provinces is a very mammoth task which takes time.
Gutu added that the National Council would meet this weekend where members of the National Executive Committee would be announced.
I'm pleased to advise the listeners that the first National Council of the MDC after the fourth National Congress that was successfully concluded on the 2nd of November this year will be held this coming Saturday on the 13th of December 2014 at the party headquarters in Harare at Harvest House. And this is an opportunity where the new National Council will be unveiled.
Sources in the MDCT said the party's president, Morgan Tsvangirai, is expected to bring back former organizing secretary of the party, Nelson Chamisa, into the national executive. Chamisa, who had been nominated by all but one of the MDCT's 12 provinces for the post of secretary general, lost to Douglas Monzora by a wide margin. In terms of the MDCT's constitution, Mr. Tsvangirai has the power to appoint 12 people into the national executive. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, President Robert Mugabe is now battling with a faction allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa on how to deal with members of the faction said to be led by under fire Vice President Joyce Mujuru. The party's legal committee led by Mnangagwa approved constitutional amendments at the Congress that call for the expulsion of party members found to be, quote, disloyal or treacherous. Mrs. Mujuru and her backers, who include former party secretary for administration Didmas Mtasa and Public Service Minister Nicholas Goche, are being accused of plotting to assassinate Mr. Mugabe, but the allegations have not been substantiated.
An amendment was also made to suspend for 5 years 9 former provincial chairpersons loyal to Vice President Joyce Mujuru. But Mr. Mugabe showed his willingness to accommodate some alleged Mujuru allies by appointing them to the powerful Central Committee. He also suggested that Mujuru and Mutasa can be ordinary card-carrying members. This is despite calls from some hardliners in the Mnangagwa camp not to accommodate them. International Crisis Group Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Mr. Mugabe consolidates his power by playing the two factions.
Well, I think that Mr. Mugabe will be aware that unity within the party still remains an objective, albeit in a context where a very significant number of the party's leadership has effectively been purged from those leadership positions. We haven't seen a significant pushback from those associated with the Mujuru camp, which indicates that they are probably likely to keep their heads down low and wait for some kind of rehabilitation.
From the pages so far, some are saying Mrs. Mujuru is already out. Can we now safely say that Mr. Mnangagwa has the inside lane?
Yes, I mean, I think that most people have been gagging to say that Mnangagwa is a shoo-in, and I'm sure he's been also gagging to see this happening as quickly as possible. But he will be previously aware of having been so close to the throne and having it pulled away from him 10 years ago in 2004. Remember, for the first 10 years of the new constitution, the president gets to pick and choose who his vice president is. The section of the constitution that looks at running mates and elected positions is not there. So Mr. Mugabe could choose somebody tomorrow and he could get rid of them the day after tomorrow. So the elevation doesn't necessarily guarantee succession in terms of the state presidency. But also we need to see how this plays out within the party. And as far as I'm aware, despite all the noise about the constitutional changes within ZANU-PF, we still haven't seen a copy of the updated constitution.
And that was International Crisis Group Southern Africa Project Director Pius Pigu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Pretoria, South Africa.
And Chris, following the ZANU-PF Congress that ended at the weekend, which was watched by many around the world, observers say President Robert Mugabe is no longer in a position to effectively lead Zimbabwe and turn around the ailing economy due to his advancing age. One of the observers, a political analyst Dr. Alex Magaisa of Kent University in Britain, says the president's public speech errors, including his unexpected denunciation of his own party at the just-ended 6th Congress, are an indication that he's no longer politically astute. His views were echoed by independent political commentator George Mkwananzi, who added that it is unfortunate that President Mugabe is likely to contest the 2018 presidential election at the age of 94 if things go his way. Mkwananzi tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube this does not give a good impression of a person who was once regarded as a liberation icon by some Zimbabweans.
It is quite obvious that Robert Mugabe is now thoroughly advanced in terms of age. I mean, at the age of 90, it is quite rare to have a country, you know, composed of youthful citizens like Zimbabwe being run by somebody who is supposed to be their ancestral spirit. Now, we have a country being run by somebody who gets things mixed up, you know, and some things literally leak out of his mind, including guarded secrets like the percentages of who won what during the 2008 election. I think he's now a nonagenarian, because he's now above the age of 80, who probably, because of the cabal of the military and other arms of enforcement, he is holding the entire nation at ransom, and that's very pathetic.
Mr. Makaisa, President Mugabe is the assured candidate for the 2018 elections. What are your thoughts on his ability to lead the country effectively?
Well, I mean, I think as my colleague has indicated, President Mugabe, he is now at a point where it's not clear whether he is in sufficient control of everything that goes on around him, or indeed there are people who are merely, you know, using his power. I'm really surprised that they are putting him up as a candidate for 2018. In 2018, I think he will be 94 or running into 95. That's a long time. And to imagine that he would then have to serve another 5 years, that would take him up to about 99 or 100. I do not for a moment believe that President Mugabe wants to retire or wants to leave office before he dies. And those who are waiting or hanging around him, hoping that there will be an opening and that they have now succeeded by pushing away Joyce Mujuru, I think they have an awfully long time to wait as well.
And Mr. Mkwananzi, what is your take on this? Do you think there's somebody who is in control instead of the president?
It is quite evident that he will not be the person running the state. If you were following the Congress itself, there were so many revelations that Robert Mugabe allowed to jump out of the box of secrecy by admitting that his wife is micromanaging him, even as he was addressing the Congress. So you can see the country is going to be run by Grace Mugabe. If Zimbabweans are unfortunate enough, we might even have Grace Mugabe being appointed one of the vice presidents. That would literally mean that effectively he would be the de facto and the de jure, you know, president of Zimbabwe. Then one has to ask this question. Why should Robert Mugabe, at such an advanced age, instead of taking pension and enjoying the last of his days
you know, resting, continue to provide himself as a leader for the people of Zimbabwe. There must be so many things that he is trying to protect himself and his family from, and we wonder what it is.
That's a very big question. And Mr. Makaisa, do you think that Zimbabweans have confidence in the president to improve their lives?
If you ask a person from ZANU-PF, you tell you that they have confidence in their president. But I think if you ask the average Zimbabwean, they will tell you that there are so many social and economic challenges that they have been facing for the past 15 or so years, and they do not have confidence that the president and his team have the capacity to get them out of the economic problems that they are having.
And finally, Mr. Mkwananzi, what can be really expected to change under him? For instance, the economy, despite these efforts that are being made by his minister, Patrick Chinamasta, to lure Western investors, Mr. Mugabe has actually remained hard line against the West. So where is the country going there?
Right now, the country does not have its currency. It now has a national budget that is similar to a small town in South Africa. So who would want to continue to invest, you know, in the kind of a leadership which has done so much in reversing all the economic gains of Zimbabwe over the years, you know, since colonial times?
That was independent political commentator George Mkwananzi. You also heard the views of political analyst Dr. Alex Magaisa of Kent University in Britain. They spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg and London.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
South Africa issues new requirements for asylum seekers.
But first of all, we look at regional and international news.
The Philippine Red Cross says at least 21 people have been killed since a powerful typhoon hit the island nation. Red Cross Secretary General Gwendolyn Pang said today that at least 18 of the victims died on the eastern island of Samar, where Typhoon Hagupit made landfall late Saturday.
A South African judge has acquitted a British man accused of ordering the murder of his wife while on vacation in Cape Town. Judge Jeanette Traverso announced the not guilty verdict today, saying prosecutors had not given enough evidence to convict 34-year-old Shrien Dewani.
And we have an announcement. We would like to issue an apology for falsely reporting in our program yesterday that President Mugabe and Vice President Mujuru came face-to-face at Stoddard Hall, where many had gathered for the pre-burial ceremony of national hero Kocho Lloyd Dube. The report that the two met or that Mrs. Mujuru walked past Mr. and Mrs. Mugabe without acknowledging them are incorrect. We sincerely apologize for our error.
The South African Home Affairs Department today released the new guidelines for foreigners seeking asylum in the country. Asylum seekers are now expected to disclose their personal finances, educational qualifications, specify the number of their dependents living outside of the country, documentation, and testimonials from previous employers. The application will also require asylum seekers to explain how they were assisted to gain entry into South Africa. Zimbabweans who are currently regularizing their stay under the Zimbabwean Special Permit are not affected, nor are other Zimbabweans who have regularized their stay in South Africa through other immigration processes. Other Zimbabweans have and continue to seek asylum in South Africa, however. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Communications Manager Daniel Muzenda of the Zimbabwe Migrants Association, who says the changes pose a threat to those seeking asylum in the country.
It is really a cause for concern, and it's going to be very difficult for asylum seekers.
What does this mean for an average Zimbabwean who themselves might be seeking asylum?
it is going to be very difficult for most Zimbabweans who are seeking asylum here in South Africa, because since the government now requires salary slips, considering the economic situation in Zimbabwe, most people, when they come to look for asylum here in South Africa, they will be unemployed. So we feel South Africa should be obliged to protect refugees, considering that they are a signatory to the 1951 United Nations Convention.
There are some questions about Zimbabweans in general in regards to seeking political asylum or those who are in search for economic freedom. In your view, do you think that South Africa is considering this, as of course this move affects anyone from any country?
Yeah, they have to consider that, because when someone is looking for asylum, we are also considering the economic situation. At the same time, we are also considering the political situation back in Zimbabwe.
And that was Communications Manager Daniel Muzenda of the Zimbabwe Migrants Association speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Johannesburg in South Africa.
Relatives of performing artist Preeti Chabba, who succumbed to throat cancer Saturday after seeking treatment in India for the past 2 months, are appealing for donations to repatriate her body back home for burial. Ruth Chabba, Preeti's sister-in-law, says the family needs to raise $4,500 to repatriate her body. She says an additional $2,000 will be also needed to assist with funeral arrangements back in Zimbabwe. Mrs. Chabba says the family will announce funeral arrangements once they have secured the funds. Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye spoke with Mrs. Chabba earlier on.
What happened is that when Preeti arrived in India, they did not operate her as we had suggested. She was going for operation. They decided to do chemotherapy. After doing the chemotherapy for 4 weeks, the fifth week, this last week, she was in pain and she was so weak that they could not even perform the operation, because they told us that we'll do the operation after the fifth chemo, the fifth week. So in this fifth week, they could not perform the operation because she was so weak. They decided to put a feeding tube in her stomach, so that they'll feed her direct into the stomach, because she was vomiting when she ate through the mouth. After they put the tube, they discovered that she didn't have enough blood. So they decided to see what is causing that. They did another operation. So after that second operation, that's when she could not make it. She was so weak, and she was like on a breathing machine for about 3 days. That's when she left us.
Are there any funeral arrangements?
As the family, we are fundraising to raise that $4,500. The funeral parlor in India, they want about $2,500, and also the cargo, they want about $2,000. And also, we need something for, you know, for the burial here.
So for some well-wishers who may be listening at this time, where can they donate?
I've got my EcoCash number, which is 0772-913-455.
And that was Preeti Chabba's sister-in-law, Ruth, in speaking from Harare with Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. The late Preeti is survived by 2 daughters.
On December 10th, the global community observes International Human Rights Day to commemorate the 1948 adoption by the United Nations General Assembly of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is the first global enunciation of the inalienable rights of mankind. The declaration states that every human being is entitled to decide how and where to live his or her life, to express an opinion, to worship a god of his or her own choosing, or not at all, to be treated as an equal of his or her peers before a court of law, to participate in public life, and to have his or her voice heard in matters concerning the community, the country, the common future. In a truest sense, human rights are a fundamental object of law and government in a just society. Human rights exist to the degree that they are respected by people in relations with each other and by governments in relations with their citizens, said Eleanor Roosevelt, a member of the first U.S. delegation to the United Nations and head of the United Nations Human Rights Commission. This year's theme, Human Rights 365, emphasizes the idea that every day is Human Rights Day, that every day, in every way, each human being, regardless of gender or gender identity, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or religious conviction, is entitled to the full range of human rights, including liberty, equality, and justice under the law. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the basis of the modern human rights movement, and for the past 66 years has served as the guiding principle for constitutions of newly independent nations, as well as both international and transnational organizations. And it has inspired civil society and human rights groups in their efforts to bring pressure on governments that violate the human rights of their own citizens. Today, as we observe International Human Rights Day, we celebrate the Declaration of Human Rights, the document that now and in the future represents moral force in the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, it has not been a bed of roses for Zimbabwe at the ongoing Africa Region 5 Youth Games. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
The ongoing Africa Region 5 Youth Games are in danger of losing spectator value following the disappointing performance by most of the country's representatives so far. Usually, such competitions are known for drawing huge crowds, but that is not the case for Zimbabwe, as all but one of the country's boxers have been knocked out of the competition. Only Jordan Anwumwe still remains in the contest. All the four others have been blown away, including the highly rated Simon Matiambombi. The young mighty warriors were yesterday hammered 5-0 by South Africa, right in front of President Robert Mugabe, who has come to Barberfield Stadium to officially open the games, which will run until December 14. Already, there are excuses, with coaches Telele Sibanda blaming inadequate preparations.
The final camp was our first camp together. Really, they could have been better, if I may say that.
The young warriors, too, have been disappointing. They started to 1-0 draw against Mozambique in their opening game. Mozambique has no history in Pan-African football, and it was expected that Zimbabwe were to steamroll over their neighbors. The team has to win their outstanding two games to remain with a chance of progressing further in the competition. The only athletes who have been impressive so far are tennis players Rodzai Saurombe and Valeria Bunu, who have advanced to the next round in their games. Saurombe, who has traveled all the way from his base in the USA, is excited in taking part in the game.
It's always good to come back and play at home. I felt so good.
There are two more games to come in other sporting disciplines, like basketball, volleyball, athletics, and netball, and Zimbabweans have to start winning to appease their horde of followers. The men's basketball team takes to the court this evening, but has a tall order against reigning Africa champions Angola. The Africa Region 5 Youth Games are a symbol of the future for sport, and how Zimbabwe will perform in the competition reflects what the future holds for the country. Meanwhile, the 63-day Big Brother Africa competition, one of the most watched television shows, not only in Zimbabwe but also on the continent, finally came to an end yesterday. The competition started with 26 contestants drawn from all over Africa, but was last night reduced to only 8 contestants, among them Zimbabwe's Tariro Marapara, popularly known as Butterfly, and Jerome Abel, better known as JJ to television viewers. The two, though, did not win the top 300,000 prize money, but reaching the final day was an achievement far beyond the reach of many on the continent. First to be booted out of the house on the last day of the show was Butterfly. JJ followed that, bringing an end to Zimbabwe's dream. Tanzania's Idris Sultan eventually won the 300,000 prize money, giving Tanzania their first ever Big Brother Africa title. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, This is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael. Please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk, speaking about the ZANU-PF Congress. This is Sandra Nyaira signing off. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And this is Chris Gande. Good night.